Hello everyone, welcome back. It is the afternoon of November 3rd, 2013. It's a nice, easygoing Sunday afternoon here in Winnipeg. I hope things are well with you in your part of the world, or at least as well as they can be. This past month for me has been a combination of many things. Work is incredibly busy. The weather has been holding nicely, so we've been having a wonderful fall. The darkness of the coming winter is setting in. The days are very short now, and I'm feeling a lot of fatigue. There's a lot of urge to sleep. It's just the basic hibernation feelings that come on as winter comes on. And in the middle of all of that, one of my closest friends died in this last month, unexpectedly. Her name was Jill Osler. She lived in England, and I had the chance to see her for a short time on my trip to England this year. So that was an unexpected and very sad incident. And she will be missed by many people. I've only had a couple of people write in with comments this month. I think there's one small question in the midst of that. But that will leave me free to kind of ramble on about various points concerning a non-dual perspective. As always, I want to thank those of you who tune in, those of you who do send in questions and comments, those of you who send in the occasional donation, and as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for posting these responses each month. Before I get into the two comments that came in this month, I want to make a general statement about something else. Recently, I heard from a couple of people who were saying that somehow I'm dismissing spiritual practice as being irrelevant or unimportant. Dismissing that I'm also dismissing meditation practice as being irrelevant or unimportant to anyone's life. And I just want to make it very, very clear that I've never told anybody not to meditate, and I've never told anybody not to do spiritual practice. In the observations that I offer here on this website and in my various writings, I'm not making any comment about anybody's particular lifestyle. And in fact, I'm encouraging everyone to simply live in the way that makes most sense to them. However, I'm also pointing out to the world in general that what makes sense to one person doesn't necessarily make sense to another person. So it may be that in the process that you are, you may love sitting quietly for a certain portion of the day, or you may love the notion of exploring your own particular behavior and exploring the possibility of living life in a healthier way. And all of that is wonderful. And the only thing that I'm commenting on in relation to that, those kinds of interests, is I'm asking if anybody's interested in looking at a larger picture of what's going on in that situation, and perhaps acknowledging that they don't create their interest in meditation, and they don't create their inclination to sit quietly, and they don't create their interest in exploring their own particular behavior and exploring the possibility of living in a more refined and perhaps healthier way. I'm simply asking if anybody's interested in acknowledging that we don't create these basic needs, these basic interests, these basic concerns, these basic abilities, or any particular lack of ability. And I'm also wondering if somebody might be interested in acknowledging the fact that not everybody on the planet is interested in meditation. It doesn't matter how much of a zealot somebody becomes about meditation or spiritual practice, or how much they think that that's good for absolutely everyone on the planet. The fact of the matter is, not everyone is interested in that. And for someone to think that everybody should be interested in that is a bit odd. It's a bit like a sparrow trying to tell all the other birds in existence that they should all be sparrows. It doesn't make any sense. In the same way that some people are interested in music, and some people are interested in art, visual art, and some people are interested in athletics, and some people are interested in business, some people are interested in things like meditation and spiritual practice. But it's an interest that they didn't create, and it's an interest that isn't for everyone. Lots of people who have an interest in music think that there's lots to be gained there in an interest in music, but very few of them go around telling the rest of the world that they should be musicians. And Olympic athletes feel that they've probably gained a lot from all the years of training to become an Olympic athlete, but they don't necessarily go around telling everybody to be Olympic athletes. However, there's in this area of spirituality or meditation, often we have groups of people thinking that there's lots to be gained there in that, and that everybody should be doing that, which, again, is just a bit odd. From this non-dual perspective, we're simply acknowledging the larger movement of existence and the fact that each and every one of us is a legitimate expression of that great mysterious dance of existence, whether you want to call it the great spirit or the unformed ocean of existence or the Tao or Atman or whatever. Every one of us is a legitimate expression of this greater mysterious dance of the moment, because there is only a totally unexplainable happening of the moment. And that's expressing itself in whatever way it expresses itself. Now, it's quite possible to acknowledge this larger, mysterious happening of the moment without doing spiritual practice and without doing what's generally known as meditation practices. It's just a simple acknowledgement of the happening of this moment. The fact that it has no particular form to it, everything is moving and shifting and changing. The fact that we don't have any legitimate labels for this happening. I mean, every one of us has a storyline that says when we came out of the womb, we didn't have any labels, and we were taught to bark these labels by members of our family, by members of our educational system, by society in general. We were taught these various labels for apparent forms, forms that are changing and don't actually exist, and that these labels within the English realm, they're one set of labels. Within a Russian realm, it's another set of labels. Within a French realm, it's a different set of labels. That these labels are just meaningless sounds, and they only take on meaning when they get attached to apparent forms. But it's a very simple thing to ultimately acknowledge that these are meaningless sounds attached to forms that don't actually exist. It's just an appearance of form. Whatever form seems to exist is on its way to some other expression. Again, it's a simple thing to acknowledge that we don't create our sounds. We didn't create our body or our brain, and in this moment, we're not overseeing the firing of every neuron of the brain, every electrochemical firing of all the cells of the brain. We're not overseeing that, and it's this electrochemical firing, this automatic firing, that's giving rise to the next mood, to the next thought. We don't exist as anything apart from this totally unexplainable happening presenting itself in this, what we call this moment. And it's not necessary to call it anything at all. And it still makes itself obvious. It doesn't require a movement of thought for the happening of this moment to make itself obvious. Now, it's possible to acknowledge this greater mysterious happening of this moment and not have a particular interest in spiritual practice or meditation. It's also possible to acknowledge this greater mysterious dance of the moment and still have an interest in meditation practice or spiritual practice. Either one is fine. From this non-dual perspective, it's simply acknowledging that whatever occurs is the dance of a totally unexplainable, vibrant eventing. It's not the personal doing of something called a human being. It's a totally mysterious eventing, spontaneously, automatically, mechanically expressing itself. And with the use of those words, I'm not trying to define it. I'm just attempting to point out that it isn't anybody's personal doing. It's just happening the way it happens. So all of that's from this non-dual perspective. And I have never told anybody to meditate. I've never told anybody to not meditate. I've never told anybody to do spiritual practice, and I've never told anybody to not do spiritual practice. I don't even make any comment about anybody's particular lifestyle. I'm simply considering a bigger picture, which has nothing to do with the storyline of a little me doing meditation, or a little me not doing meditation, or some weird storyline about a little me making decisions to do one thing or another. What I'm offering here, what I've always been offering, is a consideration of something larger, something that isn't definable by those little stories. And any of the storylines I use, when I enter the usual storylines that humankind uses, to enter those storylines is simply to point out the contradiction inherent in those storylines, to point out that they can't possibly be describing what's going on here. So again, from this non-dual perspective, you don't create your body or your brain, you don't create how they work. You don't create your particular needs, your particular interests, your particular concerns, your abilities or your lack of abilities. All of that is the movement of this larger, totally unexplainable happening, whether we call it the universe, the great spirit, God, the Tao, the unformed ocean of existence, the river of life, or simply the formless or the unformed, doesn't really matter to me. All of that simply is pointing to the unexplainable happening of this moment. And within the world of apparent forms, each and every apparent form is unique. No two snowflakes are identical. No two leaves are identical. No two blades of grass. No two trees. No two human beings have the same breath rate, the same pulse rate. No two human beings have the same skin composition. And no two human beings have the same assembly of interests or concerns or, there may be certain basic needs that we seem to share, but there are any number of needs that we don't share. And that goes for our so-called abilities and lack of abilities as well. So this is just saying, whatever interest you have, follow them. As Schopenhauer said, you can do what you want to do, you just can't create your wants. So if you tell me that you're a human being who loves to meditate and who loves spiritual practice and loves to explore the possibility of refining one's behavior in an attempt to maintain physical health, that's great. You're a wonderful expression of existence. But then if you come along and you tell me that somebody else tells me that they're a human being and they have no interest in meditation and they have no interest in spiritual practice, perhaps they have an interest in business, perhaps they want to make $1 million, that's great. You're a wonderful expression of existence. For, historically, for about 3,000 years, there have been teachings advising human beings to meditate or do spiritual practice. And, after 3,000 years, if we look around the world at how many people are meditating or how many people are really focusing on spiritual practices, we're going to find that not a lot of people have an interest in this. Even if we go to something like Buddhism, where, in Buddhism, the Buddha declared in his teaching, and it's still recorded, that the only way to enlightenment was through mindfulness practice. And yet, if you go to Southeast Asia, out of the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of men and women that are in monastic practice, they're ordained monks and nons. Although in Southeast Asia, women can't take a full ordination, they can still participate in monastic practice to whatever degree they want to participate in it, unofficially. And in Southeast Asia, where you have the teachings of Theravada Buddhism, and the main teaching in that, one of the main points in the teachings of Theravada Buddhism is that the only way to enlightenment is through mindfulness practice. Basically, you've got less than 4% of all of those monks and nuns doing mindfulness practice. Some of them, a larger percentage may dabble in it every now and then, but as some main interest in their life, very few of them have that as an interest. More are interested in the words, in the academic side of Buddhism. Now, after having said all of that, I would also like to perhaps mention that for those people who do have a non-dual sensibility, but they love what's generally known as meditation practice, and they love a spiritual lifestyle, spiritual practice, there's something in that you might be careful with. Because if you get involved with a group of people that are interested in meditation practice or spiritual practice, very few of them will have a legitimate non-dual sensibility. The vast majority of people that are engaged in meditation, what would be known as meditation practice or spiritual practice, these are people who really feel that they are in charge of existence and that they are examining their life and that the more they examine, the clearer they will become and the less suffering they will have in their life, and that they somehow are in control of this situation. The one thing that I would ask you to perhaps note is that as long as you are involved with that group, you will probably never feel that you are good enough, because that group will have a particular standard and you will never quite meet that standard. So from a non-dual perspective, everyone is already good enough. Everyone is in any moment being the only thing they can possibly be. Now, that includes people who meditate and people who don't meditate. It includes people who do spiritual practice and people who don't do spiritual practice. I'm saying that for those who do have an interest in the meditation and spiritual practice, just perhaps be a little careful about how you approach something like mindfulness practice, because really, within the world of stories, the most that that can be is an exploration of what life might allow and what life might not allow. It's never the situation that you're in charge and you're understanding life in a certain way and you will ultimately be able to drop all of your suffering through that kind of control. Again, I'm not saying don't do spiritual practice, and I'm not saying don't meditate. I'm saying if you have that interest, then you might, if you're interested, if you're also interested in this, in a non-dual perspective, you might also realize that life is expressing you with this interest. It's a wonderful thing to explore your own apparent behavior and to consider what's healthy and what's not healthy. However, that doesn't give you absolute control over life. Even people who have an extremely dualistic approach to life do not believe that they have absolute control over existence. And yet, the vast majority of people who are doing meditation practice and spiritual practice feel that they are never quite good enough and that they just need to work a little harder in order to be perfect, in order to get out of their suffering. And wonder of wonders, nobody is ever good enough. People usually end up feeling that they just haven't gotten rid of that anger, the last little bit of anger that they have, because they just haven't seen things clearly enough. Or they just haven't gotten rid of that little bit of anxiety that still exists because they just haven't seen everything clearly enough. But the fact of the matter is, the Buddha didn't manage to get rid of all of his anger. I mean, it's still clearly recorded that he would get annoyed with some of his followers. Christ didn't get rid of his anger. It's clearly recorded that he got angry at the money changers in the temples. Even wild animals feel anxious in a situation that's not familiar to them. That's the natural response to an unfamiliar situation. So, again, these situations of mindfulness practice or spiritual practices are really an exploration, ultimately, to see what life will allow and what life doesn't allow. And all of that's within the world of apparent form and storylines. Again, my comments on this website and in my writings are mainly focused on a larger picture, the acknowledgement that ultimately life doesn't have a particular form, everything is moving and shifting and changing on its own, that ultimately our storylines don't describe what's actually going on here, These are meaningless sounds attached to forms that don't ultimately exist. And that this great mysterious movement of this moment, everything that we consider to be happening in this moment, is happening on its own. If we sit down and we make no effort to do anything at all, everything that we are still makes itself obvious. It still happens. And ultimately, we will not be able to sit here forever. We will be compelled to go get something to eat. We will be compelled to go to the toilet. We will be compelled to hang out with friends. We will be compelled to go to work if we don't have money in order to rent space to live in or buy food to eat. And all of that is the compelled movement of existence, a totally unexplainable happening. My main interest in life is the fact that this happening of this moment is happening all on its own. It's nobody's personal creation. And that there's no way of saying what this actually is. It's just this doing what it does. All of the apparent expressions of this totally mysterious event are unique. Each one is different. Each apparent form is different in the same way that each and every snowflake is unique. They're not even those nice crystalline circles that most people think they are. The vast majority of them are weird, bizarre shapes that bear no resemblance to each other. So in the same way that each and every snowflake is unique, each and every human being is unique. So I don't give a blanket statement as to what somebody is supposed to do in their life. Do whatever makes sense to you. Do whatever you're compelled to do. My only interest is in my only real interest here in this situation is to point out that whatever makes sense to you, you didn't create that sensibility. And whatever needs and interests you have, you didn't create those needs and interests. So, having said that, let me read one of the things that came in this month. Dear Daryl, even though stories are just fantasies, here's mine. About 4 years ago, after flirting with Buddhism's all my adult life, I got serious about Zen, then quickly turned to Vipassana. So Vipassana meditation, Vipassana practice, that's spelled V-I-P-A-S-S-A-N-A, Vipassana practice. This is what's known as mindfulness practice. So this is the attempt to observe the various events of the moment. So this person says, after getting serious about Zen, he then quickly turned to Vipassana practice. Enlightenment became an achievement-oriented pursuit for me. I believed the Sotapanna to Arahat trajectory. Basically, these are, within Buddhism, these are considered to be stages of enlightenment. I seemed to experience the blip of a fruition. Day-to-day lived experience became insubstantial, like a flickering film. Everything was real, but now I have the word for it. It was unformed. It was disturbing, often depressing, like holding my hand in a stream of running water, only my hand was part of the water and the water was life. And then at some point, I didn't believe anything about the mechanistic way this was said to happen. For example, that meditation was an instrument or tool for awakening. I kept sitting, but now I just sat there. On my last retreat, I just sat, ignoring the instructions to put the attention in a particular place. Some important shifts took place that continued to unfold for the next year. For one, I realized that I was everything around me. The only word that I had and have for it is soup. That I am in and of the soup, a continuous field / matter / energy / spirit that extends in all directions. Sounds exotic, but it's not exotic in actual experience. In the soup, I sometimes feel trapped. Not that I get the sense that there's any place to escape to. I can't say that I've ever had the rush of feeling free or liberated. I've had no calamities or big transcendental events. However, I've had low-key experiences. Sometime later, I came across your books. After reading Essence Revisited, I felt a profound sense of relief and rest. I knew that everything in my life is exactly as it's supposed to be, and I realized how little influence I have over anything. Seeking subsided. I lost all interest in spiritual stuff. I stopped sitting for over a year, though I wanted to get back to it because it mellows me out. I relaxed into the storyline of my life. Things just happened and unfolded. My actions, my speech, my events, or the events, etc. I didn't feel that anyone was there or here, though the sensations of a self, a body continued. I didn't worry so much. I didn't seem to care if I didn't get it, because I was getting something. I didn't need to get more. Sort of like money. I know some folks have more of it, but that doesn't mean I do or should or will. Recently, some part of me thinks I don't get it. There's more to realize. I don't feel one with the universe. There's still a subject. I've never felt exhilarated to be free. Sitting has started up again, but mostly I'm compelled to sit because I like sitting and look forward to that time. Before, it was a bit of a duty, like logging hours on a project. I know that there's nothing to be done. I know that this will simply play out and unfold the way it does. Realization, maybe, whatever that means. Entertainment, more likely. Whatever, I don't even know why I'm writing to you, except that I can't talk about this with anyone. I don't have a question. It's stupid to talk about this stuff. Whenever I put any of it into words, it sounds stupid and self-aggrandizing. Enlightenment doesn't exist, except as a fantasy of attainment in my mind and in the culture. What a waste of time to talk about it. And who wants to hear about these concerns? Even if enlightenment does exist, it has no value. Again, I want to thank you for your books and your outlook. They have helped settle a lot of conflicts. Your books are also so well structured, it's nice. Most spiritual writing is so sloppy, even when it's good. Sometimes it's good sloppy, sometimes it's just plain sloppy bad writing. All the best. This person also wrote in a short time later to apologize for writing in about all of this stuff, because very shortly after sending this email to me, he realized, well, that's all part of a dance too, so it's nothing really to be concerned about. However, I feel it's important that some of these expressions be read out, because here's somebody who really does relate to the great unformed dance of existence, and yet he has a great love of sitting quietly. It doesn't necessarily feel that he's arrived somewhere, and that's ultimately a fact of this non-dual sensibility. There's no feeling that you're arriving anywhere in particular. Whatever it seems to be now is always moving on to something else. People wonder why we never feel quite settled. And it's that life has no particular form. Its innate energy of life is to move on to a different expression. So even if we are reasonably settled in some situation, there's always this drive to something else. And all of that is the expression of this totally mysterious, unformed dance of existence. Simply expressing itself, and whatever way we're expressed, is the legitimate expression, the natural expression of this totally unexplainable happening. All right. Another person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl." Hi again. Or, "Dear Daryl, hi again. Just a couple of questions about this non-duality thing. What I've been wondering is this. To what degree is this so-called non-dual perspective about an intellectual change in thinking, and to what degree is it pointing to some kind of very concrete and radical shift in perception? I guess that it can't be just intellectual mumbling, but must also refer to some kind of concrete change in the way of experiencing the world, because otherwise people wouldn't be making such a fuss about it, eh? You keep saying that a non-dual perspective is an acknowledgement that, first, descriptions don't apply to life. There's no way of saying what's happening. And second, this happening is happening by itself. No one's doing it. So if I ask myself, do I have a non-dual perspective, I can certainly relate to these two basic claims. I really don't know what's going on here. Neither can I find a separate self in charge of it anywhere. Also, from time to time, I can feel this subtle sense of childlike freedom, which I think could be the same sensibility you're pointing to. But this sense isn't always there. Sometimes the mind is very clear, and there's a sense of well-being and the absence of storylines. But on the other hand, I still find myself repeating the same old habitual thought patterns from time to time, and can sometimes feel quite confused and separate from life and so on. It's ever-changing. So based on this, do you think I have a non-dual perspective in the classical sense of the word, or am I still missing something? Of course, it doesn't ultimately matter what you or anyone else thinks of my experience, but I'm still curious about your perspective. Also, I'd like to ask you, why are you really communicating this? I mean, really. All the best to you. To what degree is this non-dual perspective about an intellectual change in thinking, and to what degree is it pointing to some kind of very concrete and radical shift in perception? This non-dual sensibility has mainly to do with the falling away of believing your stories about existence, and also the feeling that you're in charge, that you're fundamentally in charge. Now, it's the acknowledgement that whatever's happening in this moment, whatever you call outside of you, whatever you call inside of you, I mean, there is no outside and inside, there's just the happening of this moment. And it includes what we call outside and inside, that there's no way of legitimately saying what any of that is, and it's just happening on its own. Now, this person is saying that he relates very strongly to both those points, that he can't really find anybody in charge, he can't find a self that's in charge of the happening that he is or the happening that anybody is. And he really cannot explain what's going on here. So that is basically the classical non-dual sensibility. Now, be very clear that this is not the acknowledgement of some bliss state or a feeling of union that never changes. It's the acknowledgement of an eventing, the happening of this moment, that never expresses itself the same way twice. It's moving and shifting and dancing. It expresses itself in ways that seem to be similar within the world of apparent forms, but no two apparent forms are ever exactly identical. So, once again, the so-called realization or awakening is not the acknowledgement of a bliss state. It's not the acknowledgement of a state of union, a feeling of absolute blissful oceanic union that never changes. The realization or the awakening is the acknowledgement of a happening that nobody's doing, and a happening that simply expresses itself in a wide range of apparent expressions, apparent forms, apparent states of mind, apparent emotions, apparent seasons, apparent people, apparent planets. However, none of those forms can be the absolute truth, because the basic impression of existence is that all of these apparent forms are changing. Some people, some apparent people, may have this sensibility, but they may love the world of thought. They may love the use of the world of thought. Even though if you pull them aside from their usual activities and you ask them point blank, do these thoughts explain what existence is? They will say no. That thought is simply one of the mysterious expressions of existence. But I love that thought. I love that expression. I love playing with that expression. So basically all of the physicists in the world could generally fall into that arena. Because physicists in general don't believe that thought describes existence as it actually is. However, they love coming up with conceptual formats for living with life, for living life, even though they know that those conceptual formats can never really describe existence in any true way. There are others who have this non-dual sensibility and they have very little interest in thought. They no longer want to engage in conversations with people. Some of them want to go live off in some area where they're very much alone. I mean, they still have enough of a connection with society in order to survive, in order to maintain themselves, but they don't really want to engage in the usual viewpoints that human beings have. Some of them occasionally will stop speaking. They're just no longer interested in engaging in conversations with people. Now, everyone else who apparently has this non-dual sensibility will fall somewhere on a range of expression between the ones who still love thought and the ones who have no interest in thought. And yet, all of them can agree that descriptions do not apply to whatever's happening in this moment, that descriptions cannot tell us what's actually happening in this moment, and that this happening is simply happening on its own, spontaneously, automatically. Like the moving of the seasons, the shifting of the seasons, the changing of emotions, the movement of the planets. It's just the dance of something that can't really be explained in any way whatsoever. All right, and last but not least, somebody else has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Hope you're well. I still very much enjoy listening to your monthly explorations because over time, they seem to reflect my basic everyday experience in all its richness, mystery, and spontaneity, the same way that art, science, and even religion reflect it when they are rigorous, courageous, and eloquent. Thank you, then, once more, for your art and for your thought. If I may add something to these question and answer exchanges, it occurs to me that the reason so many keep coming back to this exchange with questions about the myths of the seer and awareness, inquiries into your take on what the Buddha, Jesus, or Lou Reed said about nirvana, karma, purgatory, determinism, progress, and the problem of evil, or the definition of thought, speculations on your own past, present, and future, or their own past, present, and future awakenings. The reason is, geez, I don't know the reason. It seems like people just can't stand to admit that we don't know what this is, what we are. There seems to occur a deep revulsion that craves solace in opinion, fantasy, and conjecture, anything but the actual unnameable experience. Seems like people will walk the earth, hurt their bodies, invest precious time, money, and emotion in anything that promises a subtle, intimate release from what is actually going on, not what seems to be going on, not what we hope or fear or wonder about what is going on, but what is actually presently going on right now. So many questions seem to reflect a recurring sentiment of maybe I missed something, can I check it out with you? But then again, that's just the way it seems. That's just the way it seems. For now, have a fun winter. And yes, I mean, that would be one way of expressing this, that apparent human beings, in general, do not want to say outright that they don't have a clue as to what's happening here in this moment. There's, within the world of apparent form and within the world of storylines, we could say that the most basic way that a human being wants to escape life is through understanding, through description, through explanation, through interpretation. There's the feeling that if we could just understand it, if we could just explain it clearly, we wouldn't have to suffer. That we would just have the ups and not have the downs. We would just have the clarity and not have the confusion. We would just have the joy and not the sorrow. And even within all the other ways that we try to escape the confusion and the downs and the sorrow and the anxiety, the most fundamental way that we attempt to escape it is that we think if we could just understand it in a certain way. Of course, all of that's just an explanation within this weird world of stories. Fundamentally, there's no way of saying what's actually going on here. From a non-dual sensibility, it's just it's always a totally unexplainable happening, spontaneously expressing itself, and we don't exist as anything other than a portion of that expression. There's no way of saying what we are. Everything we are just happens spontaneously. I mean, I know there are certain artistic types who feel that they're more spontaneous than, let's say, an accountant, but it's not true. Everybody is an absolutely spontaneous expression of existence, at least from this non-dual sensibility. And I just remembered in the question just before this last one, or before this last comment, the person had asked me, why are you really communicating this? I mean, really. And I don't have a clue as to what any of this is. I don't have a clue as to why any of it is happening. I mean, it's exactly the same as the barking of a dog or the meowing of a cat. It's the only sound I make, or it's one of the only sounds that I make. In this moment, whatever this is, whatever this happening is, you know, what we call these words coming out of my mouth, I don't know what that is. It just happens the way it happens. Now, within the world of apparent form and within the world of storylines, I could say that it's like the barking of a dog or the meowing of a cat. Again, fundamentally, there's no way of saying what any of that is. And within the world of apparent stories and within the world of apparent form, I could also say that I make this offering because I know there are so many people out there who need this offering, and I'm just doing it because I'm a nice guy. But that's just another bullshit story. There's no way of saying why any of this happens. I mean, I know lots of people want to glorify it. They want to paint it in glowing adjectives. It's love. It's compassion. But it's not. From a non-dual perspective, whatever this is, it can't be explained. It's just this doing whatever it's doing. And there's no way of saying what that is. Now, before anybody starts making a comment that I'm putting down people who want to call it love or want to call it compassion, I'm not putting anybody down. It's a wonderful thing that certain apparent people speak in poetic phrases. They can be really inspiring phrases. They can be beautiful, pleasurable. It's also the case that it's a wonderful thing that people speak in scientific terms, very precise terms, rather than generalized poetic terms. I'm just pointing out that ultimately, from a non-dual perspective, the words don't really mean anything at all. The descriptions aren't really describing what's happening here. That even the arising of poetic terminology or scientific terminology is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening spontaneously. No one is making it happen. Scientists don't create themselves as scientists. Poets don't create themselves as poets. They discover. I mean, within the world of apparent form, we could say that each of us discovers the expression that we are. But we certainly don't create the expression that we are. All right, that brings us to the end of any question or comment that came in. And that just leaves me a bit of time here. We'll let this go on a little bit longer. So I think from this point on, I'll just make some random comments regarding a non-dual sensibility. As always, this non-dual sensibility isn't for everyone. Not every apparent human being is expressed with this apparent non-dual sensibility. It's not the one and only way of looking at life. It's not the one true expression of life. It's just one of the mysterious expressions of life. So if you have an interest in a non-dual sensibility, non-dual expressions, and an urge to explore non-dual presentations, that's great. But it's not for everyone. If you are drawn to this, that's wonderful. Perhaps another thing you can keep in mind if you're drawn to this is that lots of people can learn to play the piano, but they don't all exhibit the same ability to play the piano. And so it is within a non-dual sensibility. Lots of people can share that non-dual sensibility, but they have a great range of expression in the various abilities that they display. So some people may have this non-dual sensibility, and they're very skilled at somehow pointing verbally to this sensibility. Another apparent person may have this non-dual sensibility, but they don't have much of a skill verbally in pointing to this non-dual sensibility. Some may have some artistic ability for expressing this, whether it be in music or visual art or movies. Some people may have an inclination to simply rest as the happening itself and have very little interest in the world of thought or the world of expressing this to anyone else. some apparent people may have this non-dual sensibility and actually relate more to what might be called the physical energy of the moment, a kind of buzz and tingle, rather than some intellectual description of the moment. And in fact, the descriptions themselves become some kind of vital eventing, some unexplainable buzz and tingle in their own right. Once more, many, many people can have this, apparently have this non-dual sense of existence, but each and every so-called person is a unique expression. Sometimes you can hear this non-dual sensibility expressed in a way where somebody's saying, there isn't any seeing, there isn't any hearing, there isn't any touching, there isn't any tasting, there isn't any smelling, there isn't any suffering, there isn't any frustration, there isn't any anger, there isn't any consciousness. And in a way that's right. In a way that's not quite right. More accurately, it's that whatever seems to be happening in this moment, it's not that there is no seeing. I mean, often when phrases like there isn't any seeing, there's no seeing, no hearing, no touching, no tasting, no smelling, it sounds like it's a denial of existence altogether. But there's this happening of this moment. Now, even somebody with the clearest non-dual sensibility has a basic impression that something's happening in this moment. That it's so that to say that nothing is happening, absolutely nothing is happening, is just as ridiculous as to say that you can describe something that's happening in this moment. All of that still is somehow focusing on this world of thought, when even if all thoughts fall away, it's still, there's this basic impression that something is happening. You know, and then again, that can vary as we move into what we call deep sleep. It seems as though the sense that something is happening disappears, and then it apparently reappears, and then it disappears the next night and reappears the next morning, and so on, this moving and shifting, dancing event of life. But in this moment, as you're listening to this, even if you drop all interpretations, even if you drop all thoughts, you're not going to get rid of the feeling that something is basically happening here. So it's not a matter that there's no seeing, no hearing, no touching, no. It's just that whatever this is that's happening is not something that we can call seeing. It's not something that can be called hearing. It's not something that can be called consciousness. There's this, whatever this is. It's not anything describable. So, you know, in the Ashtavakra Gita, it ends up saying that the wise man is not awake even when he's awake, and he's without thoughts even when thinking, he's without senses even among the senses, and without understanding even with understanding, and without a sense of responsibility even when being responsible. So it's just pointing out that in those moments that seem to be thinking, a situation where somebody's thinking, or a situation of somebody being responsible, that happening, even though that's happening, that's not what it is. It's not a person thinking, and it's not a person being responsible. That ultimately descriptions don't apply. Take a good look at what it is you're wanting in the pursuit of this non-dual sensibility. Be very honest with yourself. Because if you are honest with yourself, what you're wanting is some kind of control. you would like to have more pleasure in your life and not so much the unhappiness, the sorrow, the anxiety, the difficulties. You'd like to learn some technique for maintaining the pleasures, maintaining the clarity, maintaining the joy, maintaining the confidence. Or you want some ultimate understanding of existence. Or you want some sense of self that's always going to feel confident and never be tossing and turning at night, never losing sleep, never feeling anxious. And ultimately, within so-called spiritual teachings, they're not offering you the possibility of always being confident. They're not offering you the possibility of a life of never-ending pleasure. They're not offering you the possibility of understanding existence. They're not offering you the chance to have a technique that will give you control over every situation in your life. They're simply asking you, if you're interested, to acknowledge that everything you think you are is actually the movement of something that can't really be explained. That ultimately there hasn't been a little person who's been born, that all the way along, all that has ever existed has been a totally unexplainable happening that we might call the universe, the great spirit, the unformed ocean of existence, the Tao. That there, all that ever exists are the many apparent expressions of that, and that that never comes or goes. It just changes its expression. It just expresses itself as an apparent parade of ever-shifting events, ever-shifting apparent form, but always remaining a totally unformed, unexplainable happening that we would call the unformed and unexplainable happening of this moment. Just this, doing what it does. As Jiddu Krishnamurti used to point out, for the discovery of truth, there isn't any path. What there is a movement that can't be put into words. It can't ever be put into words. Another way of saying this would be that people want to understand existence through concepts, and that's the main reason that they will never acknowledge what's really going on here, because one of the fundamental acknowledgments of this is that concepts can't tell us what's going on here. And so with that realization, the tight little focus on the world of thought falls away to acknowledge the larger event of this moment. So in this moment, there's what we would call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Now, the thinking aspect is just one small part of this larger happening of the moment. So in this so-called awakening, there's an acknowledgement of this larger happening of the moment and the fact that if we simply sit and make no effort whatsoever, this big happening of the moment still presents itself. And even if we make no effort to think, thinking still happens. What we call thinking still happens. All of that moves and shifts and dances on its own. The apparent seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. Breath coming and going, heart beating, moods shifting. Vibration, pulsation, a little twitch here, a little twitch there, a little pain growing here, a big pain growing there, an automatic shift to alleviate the pain. One moment the attention grabbed by sound, the next moment the attention grabbed by a storyline and lost within the storyline. And then in the next moment, the realization, oh, lost in thinking. And then the larger expression of the moment, what we call the seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, make themselves obvious. Even if there isn't any thought, The happening makes itself obvious, moving and shifting and dancing. The great truth, the great happening is obvious, the great unformed ocean of this moment, the river of this moment. This swirling, unformed presence, a sense of presence. As Yuji Krishnamurti used to say, he would walk around looking at things and asking the question, like, what is this? What is this? So right now, if you go to the kitchen and you get a coffee cup, a coffee mug, and you go sit down somewhere and you put the mug in front of you, ask yourself, what is this? Point at the mug and ask yourself, what is this? Now, ask yourself that question and put one little limitation on the answer. Don't use a word that you've been taught to use. Don't use a word that you've been told to use. Try to figure out what word you had when you were 1 minute old or 1 hour old. And the fact of the matter is, you didn't have a word for it. You didn't have a sound for it. So when you point at that apparent mug, and you ask yourself, what is this? If you say mug, that's not a mug. Mug is just a sound. It's just some kind of symbol that gets attached to what it is you're pointing at. There's no way of saying what that is. And you can point at anything in this moment, and there's no legitimate way of saying what any of that is. If you try to say what it is, all you will do is bark a bunch of sounds that you were trained to bark. It's no different than a trained seal in the circus. We're offering your dog a dog biscuit and saying, can you speak? Can you speak? And the dog barks. The dog isn't explaining existence. And when we bark, we're not explaining existence either. It's just that in school, we got a different dog biscuit. We got a better mark. We got a gold star. But it's still the same thing. Speak. Speak, boy. Speak, girl. Speak. And when we barked, if we barked the way society wanted us to bark, we got a gold star or an A. If we didn't bark the way society wanted us to bark, we didn't get a gold star, and we got a C or a D or an F. But it's just barking. It's not explaining existence. What else? Another way we could speak about this is that the wise don't see themselves as doers or non-doers. They don't see themselves as being alive or dead. They don't see themselves as being awakened or unawakened. None of those descriptions apply. So even though in a general conversation, a person with a so-called non-dual sensibility can still engage in a conversation, they can still use apparent words in an appropriate way, in an apparent conversation, ultimately for them, those words don't really have any true meaning. They're not actually saying anything about existence. They're just a tool for functioning in existence. Another thing that's kind of odd about spiritual circles is that, you know, in all the rest of life, like, somebody might have an interest in basketball, but, you know, and they might really make the invitation for all kinds of people to come and play basketball, that there are wonderful, healthy things that can come from playing basketball. But when you start to play basketball with them, they don't stand there telling you that you're supposed to be playing like Michael Jordan, and if you don't, you're a failure. In the same way, if there are lots of people who think there's wonderful things to be learnt in playing music, in playing the piano, and they might encourage all kinds of people to learn to play the piano, but when you're playing the piano with them, they don't start telling you that you're supposed to be playing like Mozart, and if you don't, you're somehow just a failure, that somehow you just haven't worked hard enough. Yet within spiritual circles, there are all kinds of people who say, oh, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to observe your thoughts and your emotions, and there are all kinds of wonderful things to be learned there. And they might invite hundreds and thousands of other people to participate in that. And however, when you start engaging in that observing practice, they begin to tell you that everyone has got the possibility of being an enlightened being, an awakened being. And an awakened being is a certain kind of being. It's somebody who never gets angry, who never gets confused. And everybody has that possibility. And if you haven't gotten there, you just haven't worked hard enough. If you haven't cleared up all of your confusion, you just haven't worked hard enough. That you've somehow failed. This is like telling every piano player they should be playing like Mozart, or every basketball player that they should be playing like Michael Jordan. It's just not true. What's really interesting in this world, this so-called spiritual circles, is the fact that this awakening has nothing to do with becoming a particular kind of person. This so-called awakening is simply the acknowledgement that whatever's happening in this moment, it's not a bunch of human beings making something happen. It's not something describable. It's the totally mysterious dance, a totally unexplainable happening that's expressing itself in whatever way it's bloody well going to express itself. The acknowledgement is not the acknowledgement of, oh, I'm now a perfected human being. It's not the acknowledgement of, oh, I'll never feel anger again. I'll never feel confusion again. It's simply the acknowledgement that whatever this is, it's going to express itself in whatever way it expresses itself. And no one is causing that expression. No one is ultimate. There isn't any person existing apart from this mysterious movement that's influencing the movement. Every so-called person is simply an expression of that movement. You can't learn anything about this movement by thinking about it. The acknowledgement is simply the acknowledgement of this event itself, so that the thinking, it's the acknowledgement that this so-called thinking is just a totally unexplainable event occurring on its own. If there's some notion that we create the thinking and that the thinking is truly describing what's happening here, that's not a non-dual acknowledgement. The acknowledgement is that there's no way that thought can tell us what's actually happening here, and that the thinking itself, even if we don't want to think, it's going to happen anyway. It's moving and shifting and dancing on its own, so that those moments of brilliant insight, it's not a moment of brilliant insight, it's just a mysterious expression. It's just one of the many apparent expressions of a totally mysterious eventing, simply displaying itself in whatever way it displays itself. People talk about observing without thought, But you can't observe without thought. The idea of observing without thought is a thought. If thought falls away, then what that is, nothing can say. And if the belief in thought, the belief in the descriptions falls away, then in any moment, what that is, nothing can say. At every turn, this non-dual perspective is blocking any attempt to describe existence in any ultimate way, in any actual way, and it's blocking any notion that we're in charge of this happening, of this moment. Now, that may seem as though it's not going to leave you with much. And it's true. I mean, it doesn't leave you with any thought world that you're going to be able to depend on. However, what remains, if all the belief in the notions of describing existence and all the belief in the idea of somebody being in charge of the event of this moment, if that belief and those, the belief in the descriptions and the belief in the idea of somebody being separate from existence, causing any of it to happen, if all of that belief falls away, what we have is the happening of this moment miraculously expressing itself in an ever-shifting dance, an ever-shifting parade of apparent events. What we call the world of form still presents itself. What we call the world of description still presents itself. But all of it is acknowledged as a totally unexplainable, ultimately a totally unexplainable happening, just happening. Nobody's making it happen. Nobody can stop it from happening. It's what we call existence itself, and existence itself has no particular form. It's moving, shifting, like the changing of the seasons, the movement of the planets, the shifting of the Earth's surface, the rising and passing of moods and thoughts and pulsations and vibrations. Moving and shifting like the wind, just as Christ said. The wind blows wherever it blows. You can't know where it's coming from. You can't know where it's going to. And it's the same for everything born of spirit. And as it says in the last few paragraphs in the Bible, in the book of Revelations, once you see the river that's at the center of all things, this river of life, then the mark of man is removed. So the notion that this is the working of human beings, that's removed. The belief in that notion, even if the description still arises, the belief in that description no longer arises. Or even if we should fall back into it momentarily, if we take a moment and consider what our deepest sense of existence is, if you are expressed with a non-dual sensibility, that deepest sense of existence is that it's not anyone's personal doing, and that there is ultimately no way of saying what any of this is. It's just this, doing what it does, doing whatever it's doing. So, As always, this is just for your consideration. If you have any difficulty in relating to any of this response and you still have an interest in considering this, if you go to my website, if you go to this website, and you look at the drop box under Listen, you have a Talks section. And if you go to that Talks section, you have one talk that's labeled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening. If you still have an interest in considering what's being presented on this website, if you want a broad and detailed consideration of what's being presented, you might listen to that talk, An Overview of Spiritual Awakening. So, I hope that this next month brings you good things. I know that it's going to bring you a mixed bag of things. So until next time, take care. Bye.